Socialism, part two. Socialism, part two. I forget what I called it. Religion of idolatry or something. Socialism, part two. I'm going to read from Matthew 20, 1 to 15. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. Now, when he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right I'll give you." So they went, and again he went out about the sixth and ninth hour and did likewise. Now about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing idle, and he said to them, "Why are you standing here idle all day?" And they said, "Because no one hired us." He said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right you will receive." So when evening had come, the owner of the vineyard said to his steward, "Call the laborers and give them their wages, beginning from with the last to the first." And when those came who were hired about the 11th hour, they each received a denarius. But when the first came, they supposed that they would receive more, and they likewise received each a denarius. And when they had received it, they complained against the landowner, Greek word means grumbled, saying, "These last men have worked only 1 hour, and you've made them equal to us, who have borne the burden and heat of the day." But he answered one of them and said, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what is yours and go your way. I wish to give this last man the same as to you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with my own things? Or is your eye evil because I am good?" This ends the reading of God's Holy Scriptures. Now we're going to get into much more critique now. A lot of that was introduction material. The essence of socialism is the belief that the inequities, the inequalities of the market, the inequalities in society that arise from free market capitalism, that is free men making free market decisions without fraud, without coercion, without dishonesty. We're not advocating, we're talking about free market capitalism under biblical law. You're not allowed to lie, you're not allowed to water down this or to dilute the wine, or you're not allowed to have unjust weights or measures, you're not allowed to lie, you're not allowed to cheat or steal. There's no dishonesty. Socialism says that free market capitalism results in injustice and inequality. Therefore, the state must intervene in all aspects of society to ensure economic and social justice. And if you watch the Democrat debates, and if you watch the Democratic Party in the last year, you've heard all of this over and over and over again. The goal of socialism is one of total equality of outcome in society. All socialist societies speak of this principle as why they are ethically superior to capitalist nations, and thus, and this is the great appeal of socialism to young men today. Sounds fair. We got to get rid of income inequality. We want a level society. Well, let us turn our attention to a biblical and economic critique of socialism. And this analysis will, and we're just going to begin this, but this will be a good section. This analysis will explain why socialism has always been a complete failure. It's always been a complete disaster. In fact, the more consistent a nation is with the principles of socialism, the poorer and more unjust that nation will become. Socialism leads to poverty. There are a number of things to consider. And let me just preface this by saying, when Bernie Sanders appeals to the Northern European countries as socialism, he's being a liar. For they have more pure capitalism in their economies than the United States does. Do they have more welfare programs? Yes. But when it comes to business, the state stays out of things and they're allowed to conduct business as free market capitalism. Do they have high taxes? Do they have a lot of programs? Yes. They have a welfare state. That's true. But that's not socialism. Number one. Socialism is against the natural order, for it denies the fact that all men are inherently different due to heredity and circumstances. Now, it's true that all men are equal before God and before the law. Equality before the law. All men, all ethnic groups, all men, all women are created in the image of God and thus are fully human. They are ontologically equal. But men and women are born with different gifts and different abilities. And these gifts and abilities are developed to different levels or potential due to circumstances in life. How were you raised? What was your education? What were your social influences? What is your worldview? If you're raised in the ghetto and you only have a mother, your father's out committing adultery and fornicating like a beast, and you live around a bunch of criminals, and that's your guide, you're not going to be, usually, you're not going to be as successful as somebody raised in a solid Christian home and where they're taught a good work ethic. Now, one can try to improve a human's character through evangelism, church planting, Christian education, things like that. But there will always be innate differences between people. People are different. Like I said, I know a lot of people that have made a lot more money than me who have almost nothing. Because they like to go on expensive vacations, they like to go out to eat, they like to buy fancy new cars every 3 years. They spend their money like a fool and they don't really have anything for it other than a nice car. People are different. To deny this fact and demand that the state step in and attempt to socially engineer society to achieve equality of outcome is vain, foolish, coercive, and vicious. And I love that. That clip is worth so that clip where the guy says to Elizabeth Warren, well, I worked really hard to save money so my son could go to college. Are you going to pay me back the money I paid for college since you're giving all these people who didn't save money, who weren't responsible, you're going to give them free education. What about me? No, too bad. Well, you know what happens in that case? People stop saving for college because the state takes care of everything. Socialism has never been able to eliminate special privilege or inequality because everyone is different. Many poor people in the United States are poor due to laziness and immorality. You know, you look at the homeless situation in Los Angeles and in San Francisco. And when I used to be a street evangelist in the late 70s, and I used to work with homeless people and did a lot of things. Most of those people are there because they want to be there, because they want to get drunk, because they want to take drugs, because they want to shoot heroin. They don't want to go to work. They don't want responsibility. It's true. They want to be there. People are different. Many people have made poor, stupid decisions in their past. For example, I'm going to spend my time smoking pot and surfing, and I'm not going to go to college and prepare for a career. That's a decision. It's a bad decision. But that's a decision. Many people who are successful economically have a very strong work ethic. Cultures that emphasize strong work ethic tend to produce more successful people. For example, the old German culture, Chinese culture, Koreans, South Koreans. You go to sections of LA and there's all these Korean businesses. Why? Because they work 20 hours a day and get their business established. And they lend each other money and they have an amazing work ethic. Same with the Chinese. Pretty much in every area where the Chinese would go, in the old world anyway, they would prosper due to hard work. Socialism cannot change human nature and has never been able to produce complete equality of gifts, abilities, intelligence, and work ethic. It can only attempt to produce equality of wealth, either through giving jobs to people who are incompetent and unqualified, which of course penalizes the whole society, and or by redistributing wealth. In Venezuela, which has the biggest oil reserves in the world, they had this giant industry there. And after Chavez took control, he gave jobs within the oil industry to all his cronies and friends, who were totally incompetent. And the output of oil has been going down year after year, and they've destroyed the company. The wealth of the successful is given to the unsuccessful. Special privileges are thereby given to the incompetent, the unproductive, and the lazy. The inequality that arises from the normal inequality of gifts and abilities is replaced by an artificial inequality forced upon society by the state. Laziness, stupidity, and often immorality is subsidized, while intelligence, hard work, and good decisions are penalized. You can imagine what that does to society over time. Stalin had the more successful farmers in the Ukraine murdered or starved to death deliberately. They were more successful. They were better at what they did. Therefore, they had more money, and therefore, they were the enemies of the state and they had to be killed. The more strictly or consistently a socialist nation seeks to be, equalitarian in this strictest manner, the more radical will be the inequalities and special privileges it creates. You can't get rid of privilege. You can't get rid of class. You can just shift things around and make it arbitrary and unfair rather than letting life follow its normal course. The more the society will be handicapped and retarded economically as a result. Socialists justify their unjust madness by arbitrarily declaring success and wealth as evil, exploitive, unjust, and wicked. Bernie Sanders, we're going to get those billionaires. He used to say millionaires, but he's a millionaire because he's corrupt. We're going to get those billionaires. What's wrong with being a billionaire if you got it honestly? What's wrong with being wealthy if you worked hard and you got it honestly? You didn't commit fraud, you didn't lie, you didn't steal, you didn't cheat, you didn't cook the books, you got it honestly. What's wrong with that? And the answer is nothing. But they speak as though it's intrinsically immoral to have more than somebody else. They follow Marx and they do not follow biblical ethics, which makes a distinction between acquiring wealth honestly or lawfully, and acquiring wealth through fraud, deception, theft, or true exploitation. And you can read, there's plenty in the Old Testament prophets about exploitation of workers. Things like, hey, come over and work my field and I'll give you a denarius. And then the day ends and say, sorry, I don't have any money, get out of here. That happened. Things like that happened. Or chattel slavery. True exploitation would involve lying to workers about their pay or about what is required of them. You say you're going to do one thing and you make them do a lot more than what you said they were supposed to do. Holding back wages earned. And, of course, chattel slavery and things like that. If someone acquired wealth honestly, that is a good thing. It's a good thing. If you're rich and you got your money honestly, through great decisions and hard labor, being wise, that's a good thing. It's not evil. A hostility to wealth or capital acquired without lying or coercion brings nothing but envy, hatred, and unjust class warfare to society. Special privilege in socialist countries is transferred from people who earned it through hard work and good business practices to those who control power. Political power. Now, power comes through the barrel of a gun. That is, those who control the police and the military. Socialist states operate as mafia states. The leaders of the Soviet Union, Cuba, China, North Korea, Vietnam, Venezuela, became filthy rich along with their families. Through theft and corruption. While the honest, wealthy, are liquidated or placed in concentration camps. Their stuff is stolen. It's taken from them. Stalin and his cronies all had giant mansions. They had vacation homes. The special privilege and status that arises from free men using their gifts freely, apart from coercion, in a free market capitalist society is replaced for the special privileges based on total coercion, murder, injustice, and theft. The inequality that naturally arises from free choices and free talents is replaced by a new inequality based on the barrel of a gun. And that's absolutely true if you study socialism and history. The leader of North Korea is a billionaire. The leaders of China are exceptionally wealthy. The Bible explicitly endorses free market capitalism under biblical law in the parable of the laborers of the vineyard. Okay, biblical law. You're honest. Honest scales. Honest wages. You don't water the wine down. Everything is honest. There is no fraud. There is no theft. And the Bible requires compassion. Somebody gets sick. You give them charity. Or the church gives them charity. You help them out. Private charity. That's the Bible. The Bible doesn't endorse unjust, unlawful things that are called capitalism, which are really corrupt, where people beat their laborers and treat them unfairly and they commit fraud. Now, Jesus, we just read the passage, he spoke of a landowner who hires men to work in his vineyard. He hired some in the morning, some at mid-morning, others at noon, some more in the afternoon. Some were hired right before the day was over. All the men were offered the same wages, even the ones who started work in the afternoon. Or actually, they were just told, I'm going to pay what's fair. I'm just going to pay what I want. Certain grapes must be harvested quickly or the wine will lose its quality. Although I don't think this is actually a true story. It's just a parable. All the men involved were presented with a wage for a given amount of work. All the men freely accepted the offer. Okay, free choices, no lying, no deception, no fraud. And all the men were paid in full exactly as they were promised. This is the free market in action. Okay, if I say, you're going to come over and you're going to mow my lawn, I'm going to give you $10 an hour. And you mow my lawn and I give you $8 an hour, I'm a liar. That's fraud. That's deceit. But if I pay you $10 an hour and you agreed on that, then there should be no complaints. If a man did not think the wages were enough or were unfair, he could say no to the proposition or negotiate for higher wages. Free choices in a free society, in a free market. There was no coercion or dishonesty or fraud involved in the transaction at all. If you're working someplace and they're only paying you $12 an hour and you don't like it, you can quit. Go somewhere else. Or you can ask for a raise. But they're not forcing you. They don't have a barrel of a gun to your head saying, you're going to work for me for this amount of money. It's your free choice. After the workers were finished and were paid, some of those who were hired first and who had to work throughout the whole day, the heat of the day, complained that those hired afternoon received the same wages as they did. Now, note that the answer in the parable to this question assumes both private property, God owns everything, but we manage it under him. The state's not supposed to own anything other than maybe military bases and government buildings. And the right for the owner to determine wages as long as he is honest and upfront about the wages. And here's Matthew 20:15 again. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with my own things? Or is your eye evil because I am good? This is simple ethics and common sense. So if you're working, let's say you're working at Walmart and you're making $13 an hour or whatever, and you've accepted that, and you've been working there for a while, for you to get a picket and demand that the government raise it to $15 an hour, you're basically using coercion to force them to do something that they don't want to do. And that is unbiblical, and that is unjust. If we allow the state to control wages or property, not free individuals in the free market, then no business is safe from going out of business due to a bureaucratic, misguided sense of compassion. Hey, I'd like it if everybody in America got $100,000 a year. The problem is that's just simply unrealistic and absurd. You raise wages too high, arbitrarily, by the state, and you put businesses out of business because they're not going to make a profit. Socialism abandons the biblical definition of ethics, as well as the biblical limitations on the state, and thus there is no boundary line or limitation to its intrusion, control, and destruction. You see, I watched on YouTube 400 restaurants. They've raised the minimum wage in San Francisco to I think it was $15 an hour. 400 restaurants have gone out of business. 400 in the last year or two. Because they're not making any money. Here's what David Chilton says. The only functions allowed to the state by the Bible are defense of its people and punishment of criminals. And criminals, of course, are biblically defined criminals. To go a step beyond this is forbidden. Biblical law works to prevent power being concentrated in any one institution by creating and sanctioning many institutions, family, church, community, voluntary associations, and the state, all of which are legitimate but have limited powers, all acting as buffers against the other powers in a system of counterbalancing authorities. Okay, who has power over the children? Parents. They raise the children. There's a sphere of the family. There's a sphere of the state. There's a sphere of the church. They all have different responsibilities. The state doesn't excommunicate. The state doesn't have the sacraments. The church does. The church doesn't have the gun. The church doesn't have the sword. Gary North says this, quote, "No one institution should be regarded as sovereign outside of its own legitimate but strictly limited sphere. Society in this perspective is a matrix of competing sovereignties, each with certain claims on men, but none with total claims in all areas." End of quote. So statism is thus the infringement of God's limits on the state, and it is sin. The Westminster Confession, the Shorter Catechism, says, defines sin as any want of conformity unto or transgression of the law of God. For the state to fail to conform to God's law by refusing to execute those who should be executed, murderers, is statism. Because it is the state playing God by attempting to relax God's standards. For the state to transgress God's law by interfering with the price mechanism of the market is statism. Because the state is claiming omniscience and omnipotence over the creation. God has given the state certain legitimate, necessary functions, but ruling the world is not one of them. You know, ruling the family, ruling the church, telling the church what to do, telling the family what to do. The state's only duty with respect to the market is to guard against and punish what the Bible defines as public crime. And, of course, crime is not identical with sin. There are sins that are simply sins. For example, lusting in your mind after a woman whose PE shorts are too tight, and sins that are crimes, rape, murder, theft, fraud. I may have sin in my heart for refusing to do business with red-haired people, with gingers, but it is not a crime punishable by the state. And of course, God will deal with me for prejudice against gingers. Again, if my prices are too high, the search for bargains will induce people to patronize the business of a competitor whose prices more closely are in line with the reality of demand. If there's a market and I'm charging $5 a tomato, people are going to look at that, they're going to go to around the corner, and there's a table where they're 50 cents a tomato, and they're not going to buy my tomatoes, and I'm going to be forced by reality to lower my price. God's imposed scarcity, which of course is the result of the fall, induces men to become less wasteful and more creative in their thinking. The free market is free only with respect to state intervention and is never free from the providence of God. The socialist state, by creating its own law and having no eternal boundaries above itself, always becomes tyrannical and oppressive. It denies natural law, it denies biblical law, it denies freedom, liberty, and dignity, and becomes a boot stamping on one's face. Unless, of course, you're very happy to be a slave and you enjoy being a slave. A cog in the machine. And then number two. Socialism is built on the myth, this idea that people in government who are socialists or progressives are good and can be trusted to be just, impartial, and fair in all their policies designed to pursue equality. And we saw that comes from Hegel, this idea of the state is God, it can't make mistakes, whatever the state does is right. In other words, the biblical view of the fall, that men are corrupt from birth and can never be trusted with absolute, unrestrained, or unchecked power, is denied. Men are good. And that is why the Democratic Party, when it makes terrible mistakes like Obamacare and raising the minimum wage, these things that actually hurt workers, that actually cause all sorts of damage to society, they can never admit they're wrong. I mean, it amazes me how, you know, of course, they have the media on their side so they get away with it. But it amazes me that there's modern ads for the Democrats are still advocating how great Obamacare is. Obamacare was horrible. It more than doubled the cost of health care. It is presupposed that what socialist or left-wing politicians propose or attempt to do is always good. This presupposition lies behind the fact that left-wing democratic policies in America that have been obvious disasters are never acknowledged by the left. So they blatantly lie and they deny obvious facts because to admit failure is to admit that their supposed good intentions were actually wrong and evil. We discussed what the rising of the minimum wage does. We discussed socialized medicine is absolute disaster. If you want to wait in line for worse health care and pay way more for it, that's fine. If you want to do that, fine. Go move to Cuba. When socialists take over, whether Stalin, Mao, Ho Chi Minh, Pol Pot, Fidel Castro, one of the first things they do is they murder anyone seen as a threat to their power. You can go on YouTube and they show firing squads after the Russian Revolution where just people, they haven't done any crimes. They haven't done anything morally wrong. They just don't approve of socialism. And they line them up and they shoot them. They shoot them. For 30 years, I think it's called the Lubyanka, the prison in Moscow. For 30 years, hundreds of people every day were shot in the back of the head and taken out of town and dumped in the woods. Then they eliminate the freedom of the press. Then they ban gun ownership. Then they build up a huge secret police apparatus, and then they institute huge prison labor camps. Not to punish people for committing actual crimes, but to punish anyone seen as a threat to the state. Millions of people are shot, starved to death, tortured, and placed in camps. Because socialism denies transcendent law and places all power in the hands of the state, by definition, whatever it determines is justified. Marxist states, which show us socialism undiluted, which are much more consistent in their rejection of Christianity and their commitment to total power and control, cannot tolerate concepts of power, truth, or ethics that are outside of the state, such as the infinite personal righteous God of Scripture. Okay, in communist regimes, whether China, Soviet Union, Cambodia, Vietnam, usually the first people they would kill would be Roman Catholic priests and Protestant ministers. They'd all be killed. And in some countries, they would kill all the... They would just kill anyone who's not a Marxist. Power is jealously guarded in such anti-Christian states, and any concept of the division of authority with different God-ordained spheres, for example, the family, the church, the state, is strongly opposed, and it is crushed by persecution. Now, why has the United States been such a success, especially economically? Why? Well, it was strongly influenced in our Constitution by the biblical world and life view. The Constitution views man as a fallen creature who must not be trusted with total power. The civil government is thus set up with separate spheres of authority, different branches of government, that serve as checks and balances upon one another. And that wasn't even enough for the founders, so they set out a list of rights or liberties. In addition, it accepts the concept of transcendent laws, given by God, that the civil government must submit to in all circumstances. Rights don't come from the state. Rights come from a transcendent, infinite, personal God. Therefore, the state can't trample on your rights. In other words, the law is king. Anyone who violates the Constitution's guarantee of God-given liberties is not fit for office and must be removed. I'm talking about what the founders viewed. Democrats don't view this at all. The Democrats actually hate the Constitution. The people also have a right to vote out anyone who violates transcendent law. This system, however, is dependent upon voters who understand God's basic God-given rights and transcendent ethics. The statists have taken over the public school system and thus are indoctrinating American children with the idolatry of socialism. Why are so many young people into socialism? Because they've been lied to and indoctrinated in the state schools. Do the state schools have a course on the Gulag in the Soviet Union? The tortures of Chairman Mao? The murderous rampage of Pol Pot? No, they talk about how wonderful socialism is. History has demonstrated that socialist governments, which gain complete control, systematically follow a course of radical lawlessness. The state ceases to be a terror to evildoers, to productive citizens, and progressively becomes a terror to productive law-abiding citizens. The state which ceases to be a terror to evildoers and instead becomes a terror to the godly is committing suicide. You know, you go to Venezuela, people are dumpster diving looking for scraps of food. And the average citizen in Venezuela has lost a whole bunch of weight because there's no food. There's no toilet paper. The basic necessities aren't there. In the Soviet Union, if you wanted to get a loaf of bread, you'd have to wait in line for 5 hours and hope that the store didn't run out of the bread. Number three, socialism does not work because a civil government would have to be omniscient in order to intelligently plan the economy. And I think Marx knew that it wouldn't work before he died. Here's what Ronald Nash says. The miserable performance of socialist economies is no accident. There's a fundamental reason why socialist economies do not work, and that is that they cannot work. The argument that supports this contention was discovered in 1920 by Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises. And I've got his book sitting on my desk over there. In spite of one or two attempted rebuttals that that will be considered, Mises' arguments have never been answered successfully. According to Mises, socialism can never work because it is an economic system that makes economic calculation impossible. And because economic calculation is impossible, socialism turns out to be an economic system that makes rational economic activity impossible. As Giovanni Satriori explains under socialism, quote, it is theoretically and practically impossible for the collectivistic planner to calculate costs. His costs and prices are and can only be arbitrary. You know, we noted earlier, oh, well, minimum wage should be $15 an hour. Why 15? Why not 20? Why not 30? It's all arbitrary. To be sure, arbitrary not in the sense that they are established at whim, but in the sense that they are baseless. They cannot be derived from any economically significant base or baseline, end of quote. One of the great advantages to a market system is the constant supply of information it provides by means of the price mechanism. That information is not available in a socialistic system. Tom Battelle explains the socialism problem this way, quote, it is one thing for central planners to draw up a plan of production. It is quite another to carry it out. How can you, the planner, know what should be produced before you know what people want? And people cannot know what they want unless they first know the price of things. But prices themselves can only be established when people are permitted to own things and to exchange them among themselves. But people who do not have these rights in centrally planned economies. End of quote. Without free markets to set prices, socialists can never attune production to human wants. The impossibility of precise measures of cost accounting under socialism will result in economic disaster. And by the way, what the Soviet Union used to try to do is they would study capitalist countries and they'd say, well, lettuce sells for this or bread sells for that. And they would try to imitate the capitalist economy because they had no idea what to charge for things. Without free markets to set prices, socialists can never attune production to human wants. The impossibility of precise measures of cost accounting under socialism was an economic disaster. Mises did not deny that rational action might still be possible under socialism with regard to small and insignificant matters. But under a system that ignores the factors of profit and loss, it would be impossible for production to be conscientiously economical. Rational economic production would be impossible. In Mises' words, quote, all economic exchange, therefore, would involve operations, the value of which could never be predicted beforehand, nor ascertained after they had taken place. Everything would be a leap in the dark. Socialism is the renunciation of a rational economy. End of quote. The problem of economic calculation under socialism grows increasingly more serious as national economies become more complex, as economist Thomas Sowell explains, quote, where conditions are constantly changing in the economy, as in most modern industrial nations, the ability of a price system to make use of a scattered and imperfect knowledge that exists at any given time is one of its primary advantages. End of quote. But this advantage is lost in socialist economies. In a completely centralized, controlled economy, it would be necessary for the central planners to actually know what has happened and what its implications are in order to reach the same decision. This is one reason why even countries that believe in central planning on principle do not have 100% central planning in practice. The amount of knowledge required for the thousands of daily adjustments would otherwise be overwhelming. Moreover, some goods, especially in agriculture, vary greatly in quality, freshness, size, taste, etc. To plan their use centrally without being present all over the country to see the actual conditions of the strawberries, cabbage, melons, etc., listed on the official statistics would be impossible. Especially since what was a good item of produce a few days ago may be approaching spoilage or already rotten today. A fact not discoverable from looking at the statistics at the Central Planning Office, but only by looking at the millions of items individually, which can only the consumers on the spot do effectively. Socialism, therefore, presents us with a picture of a system of planning in which rational planning turns out to be impossible. Without free markets and the vital information supplied by markets, economic activity becomes chaotic and results in drastic inefficiencies and distortions. The great paradox of socialism is the fact that socialists need capitalism in order to survive. And I love the great statement that Soviets used to make during the era of the Soviet Union. We pretend to work, and they pretend to pay us. That was a very common phrase in the factories in the Soviet Union. We pretend to work, and they pretend to pay us. And they would live in these giant apartment complexes where you'd have a whole family living in a one-bedroom apartment. The great paradox of socialism is the fact that socialists need capitalism in order to survive. Unless socialists make allowance for free markets, which provide the pricing information that alone makes rational economic activity possible, or monitor the pricing information available from nations where free markets are allowed to function, socialist economies would have even more problems than those for which they are already notorious. In practice, socialism cannot dispense with market exchanges. Consequently, socialism is a gigantic fraud, which attacks the markets at the same time it is forced to utilize the market process. And I might do more on that. Gary North has a bunch of really good stuff on this. If you don't let the free market determine prices, you can't have a good economy. The Soviet Union, they might say, well, we're going to produce this many toasters this year. And so they'd have thousands and thousands of toasters collecting dust in a warehouse. But there wouldn't be enough of this, or there wouldn't be enough of that. It just simply does not work, apart from the disaster of penalizing the people that are productive. People who are productive will try to hide their wealth, or they'll try to move, or they'll simply be squashed like a bug. And all of society loses. Socialism results in great poverty. And it's been a complete and utter disaster everywhere it's been tried. But we'll stop there. But I hope you see that I'm not simply putting my stamp of approval on capitalism. We're talking about free market capitalism under biblical law. Honesty in advertising. Honesty. No fraud. No lying. No deception. And being willing to help the poor when they need help, honestly need help, not because they're sitting around smoking crack. I'll never forget the Nightline, I think it was Nightline, where they showed our food stamp action and our food, this, how great the food stamp program is. And there was a guy in California, and he was buying salmon and fresh salad with his foods credits or food stamps, and he spent his day smoking pot surfing. It was just a complete sham, because when the church does charity, it takes into account, is this person poor because they're shooting heroin? Or are they poor due to a real need? The welfare system doesn't do that. In the 1970s, I worked for a while at a welfare office in California. And I'd say 90% of the people getting welfare were just scamming the system. They may have been poor, but they could afford beer, they could afford marijuana, and they could afford this and they could afford that. They were just scamming the system. But we'll discuss this later. Let us pray. Father, we thank you so much that the Bible gives us the answers to life. We pray that you would wake this nation up. The Democratic Party is satanic and evil. Socialism is evil. Statism does not work. It doesn't help the poor. It enslaves the poor. The solution is free market capitalism and biblical law. And of course, the real solution is Christ. If people are to get off drugs and all these wicked things they do, they need to bow the knee to Christ. In Jesus' name, amen.